Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Forget this match against England on Saturday. That one is in the bag, all right? Ireland are going to beat Scotland as well next week.
Good.
Nobody is going to stop Ireland winning three in a row in next year's Six Nations. Chalk it down, Murph. These aren't the words of a cocky Irish rugby fan. These are the thoughts of Wales legend Sam Warburton, who still hits like a train in the tackle side. Mm-hmm. Six years into retirement. I saw a clip of him recently knocking some lad back with a tackle bag. Jesus. Retired in 2018.
He's a freak in the gym, apparently, still.
Imagine so. Welcome to the podcast. Speaking of freaks in the gym, Murph.
Hey, well, how's it going?
Jerry Thorne is in the studio today. Murph is a creep in the gym, yeah.
I'm neither a freak nor a creep, as I'm never in the gym.
We're going to start the build-up to England against Ireland today with Gerry Thorney in studio. This is the kind of thing being said now about this Irish team. Sam Warburton last week on BBC's Rugby Union podcast.
I watch Ireland and I'm actually genuinely in awe of how they're playing. Because I can kind of, we can all kind of imagine it. I can cast my mind back to when I was playing for the couple of seasons where Wales were pretty good. We weren't near that level. Like, their work rate off the ball, both sides in attack and D, the accuracy is just like almost unseen at international level. How comfortable they are. Everybody just gets into shape so quickly. That's why I thought it was crushing for them in the World Cup, and they've responded really well. South African fans will hate me for saying this. I still think they're the best team in the world.
Yep.
I still think they're the best team in the world. I just never seen a team who were just that almost complete. You know, like scrum time, line out. Had a couple of hiccups, but before that, they haven't lost the line out in the first couple of games. They went three halves of rugby, and now Italy now were known for being good at. We were saying this time last year, Italy are the second best attacking team in the championship behind Ireland. They played Italy and then they played Wales. They went three halves of rugby, so one and a half games, didn't concede a single point, you know? So, like, their defence is just. We don't speak about that enough, how good their defence is. So, I just think Ireland is they're so good right now. I'm not sure. Like, nobody's won the championship 3 years in a row. I'm not sure it's going to stop in the next couple of years, the way things are going.
Put down that inflatable hammered by the Irish hammer you've got there, Sam. Come on, calm it down. I've never seen a team that complete. I'm not sure who's going to stop them in the next couple of years.
Did you just not bother watching the Lions in 2005, no? I mean,
New Zealand back then.
Yeah, or maybe New Zealand when they won two World Cups in a row.
Maybe,
that tournament that we can't
about,
get past
I've
the quarterfinal.
Team that complete in the Six Nations, but I don't know. He was talking about them being the best team. He was talking about global level there, best team in the world, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's a longitudinal study, Murphy. You're obsessed with the World Cup.
Yeah,
that was ages ago. Anyway, yeah, it was. It was almost half a year ago. But Ugo Magni on the same pod went on to throw more fuel on the fire. Just named 20 stats in a row of why Ireland are so amazing and the best team in the world. And there's even like Galthier and Sean Edwards. It's not just pundits. It's like other coaches after games, besides Gatland, who's still sour and salty. But the rest of them are saying how good Ireland are.
And we're in this new territory where the build-up to an Ireland-England game in Twickenham feels like the build-up to like an Ireland-Italy in Dublin game. That's, we're in new territory.
Do you think it's that level of...
That's kind of the way this has been talked about on here, like
an unlosable game for Ireland, basically. Unless something crazy happens, as is often the writer.
Yeah. The only... What's different about this, and we had the same issue in the build-up to the Ireland-Wales game. What's different is Wales were kind of and are maxing out on the current talent that they have. England, you're looking at these guys for their club and a bit in history and, you know, the likes of Itoje and a few others, where you go, these were at one time brilliant for their club and for England. There's a lot of these guys with a much higher ceiling, and whether it's the coaching or the setup or the culture there that's holding them back, England can be a lot better than they currently are. I mean, a lot better than they currently are. Whereas Wales are just like, there's not really much Gatland could do with that group.
And we struggled to beat England in the Aviva last year in the Six Nations when they were down to 14 men.
Yep.
So this idea that this is a gimme match for Ireland, I mean, I don't buy it for a second. And quite frankly, the history of this team would suggest that you shouldn't be chalking it down as a certain victory either.
Really? Like, we don't lose too many games that we're hot favourites for, if any.
We're talking about games that are going to define this team. They were unbelievably nervous against a terrible England team with a coach who had like four training sessions before the Six Nations started last year, and like really struggled to beat England with 14 men.
And won the Grand Slam.
Yeah, of course, won the Grand Slam. But I mean, that was the game that was the deciding factor in that was the decisive game in the final game of the Grand Slam, and they really struggled under pressure.
This is a team who.
Sorry, what happened in the World Cup? I mean,
against a better team or a team around the same level.
Better team, yes. Well, I mean, but
we're well past this point of handling favoritism.
Sam Warburton and Ugo Magna know more about it than I do, and apparently we're the best team in the history of world rugby.
As I'm saying, that's a little bit much, but I think we're hot favourites against England, and when we've been hot favourites lately, we invariably win the matches.
Yeah, but I mean, himself over there is talking about this like it's a home game against Italy.
Have we outgrown the Six Nations?
Yeah, I mean, we should be looking to get into the Rugby Championship. That's absolutely.
Should we be split in two?
Let's get Jerry in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You lose
so good.
Fantastic, man.
England have been absolutely...
Here comes Rob Herring with the line of throw for Ireland on the England 10-metre line, far side. The ball is swept back. Here comes Keith Earls, gathers it now. Races inside the 22-metre line. Goes for the corner. Earls, far side of the pitch. Looks to touch it down. In for the try. Far side of the pitch. 22 minutes gone. Keith Earls with the try. Thrown over the tail end of the line-out. Across on the far side. Liveliest man in the entire place was the Ireland fella on the wing. His name is Keith Earls.
It's the Monday of an Ireland Six Nations game at Twickenham, and you'll be looking a long time to find anyone who thinks Ireland will not win this game. Jerry, how comfortable are you with this level of certainty that Ireland are going to go to Twickenham and roll England over?
Distinctly uncomfortable.
You always are, though, Jerry. It's time to embrace it.
Yeah, I guess probably something to do with the fact that I'm getting old or something. I don't know. And I just, all my early memories of going to Twickenham were thrashings. Yeah. Just Ireland used to get thrashed, 98, 2000, 2002, the three thrashings in a row. And then 2004, going there, England were world champions. They hadn't lost in Twickenham a long time, and Ireland won. And that has changed the course of history. But even then, I was looking at the records and I think Ireland have won 2 of their last 9 visits to Twickenham, 3 of their last 14. So it is, I mean, in 2018 when Ireland went there and that Baltic Day, Patrick's Day in Twickenham, and there were even money, kind of joint favourites, the two teams going into that game. And I remember going outside and having what for me was quite a big bet on Ireland to win because I was so confident Ireland were going to win that day. This time around, they're already 13-point favourites, which just seems lunacy. I'm respectful of the fact that, yes, Ireland should win and Ireland are entitled to be favourites and go all the way and win back-to-back Grand Slams. But I'm also respectful of the Six Nations and its capacity for upsets. And also England are fighting for their lives.
It's funny because I know there's this thing going around. I think other countries believe that Irish fans are getting a little bit cocky and so forth, which I don't know. Maybe that's just unavoidable when you win a lot of games or whatever. But it kind of feels to me more, certainly punditry wise, it's more the non-Irish punditry that's talking us up. You know, we played the Sam Warburton clip earlier where he's practically giving us next year's Six Nations title as well. Forget about this game or the game against Scotland next week.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I was in the cafe up the road from here, the last time I was in here, one Monday morning, a guy came up to me, boring punter, comes up to Gerry Thorny and tells him, we're going to win 3 Six Nations in a row. that was a couple of weeks back before the Wales game.
Okay, so it is Irish fans as well.
Well, it's Irish fans. But I've listened to Sam Warburton, John Barkley, Matt Dawson, and they're all eulogising about this Irish team's efficiency at virtually everything they do. That's the standout thing. Just every aspect of their game virtually is just so efficient, and it's hard to see where you find a weakness that you can really, really target. But the only thing I would say is England at Twickenham it'll be very, very worked up because Ireland do go over there now as the prize scalps of the Six Nations, reigning Grand Slam champions. And we saw in the World Cup that very often the better team, or certainly the team with the greater number of attacking metrics, be it more passes, more carries, more line breaks, more offloads, more everything, doesn't necessarily win. And the team that kicks the most and tackles the most can often win. And that's the thing about modern rugby. You could have a very uncomfortable afternoon at the very least against England and Twickenham, that's for sure.
I've mentioned this on air before about, if you look over the history of the Six Nations, where when a team sort of is on the crest of a wave and is looking really good and looking dominant relative to the other four or five teams that are in it, which is the first time for Ireland really in a long, long time that this is the case. But it's happened, obviously, England and France and other teams in the past. But I mentioned England in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they went 4 years in a row, the three Celtic nations, and then France nobbled them and they were the better team in all those years. But almost through, well, we put it down to sort of English arrogance back then, but it was sort of the sheer hatred the other countries, the underdogs had for them then, bring out this unbelievable one-off performance. It might be the only time Ireland have won that season, or the Scots pull out like once in a decade performance. And it's because it's England and it's because they're underdogs and because it's the Six Nations. It just has this history of surprising you over and over. And I think we're in that territory now with Ireland where it's something like that that trips them up, because on every metric in terms of tactics, player talent, management, where they are in their progression relative to England, they're better. A bit like the Wales thing, not quite to the same degree, but a bit like our build up to the Wales game. I don't know if complacency is the right word, but just truly believing you can lose to this inferior team. And it's a subconscious thing, I think, with players. So you're playing these guys, you're looking at them week out and you go, I'm better than them, and you're not complacent and you're firing yourself up for it, but there's some part in the back of your brain that's thinking, we can't lose to them, and that's why you might lose to them.
Yeah, I think that English team learned from all those near misses. That were, I think Wales 1 year beat them was the only win they had in the Five Nations or Six Nations to deny them a Grand Slam.
Scott Gibbs won.
Yes, yeah. The only win they had. They did a lap of honour afterwards. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I remember one team once beating them was their only win at the Six Nations or the Championship to deny them. Scotland denied them 1 year. Ireland denied them another year. France denied them another year. Everybody took turns to deny them and took great glee and pleasure at doing so. I don't think there's that animosity towards this Irish team, but there's a huge amount of respect and fear, which can certainly inspire an opposing team to play above itself. Particularly when Ireland are away and England at home in Twickenham, that's a big, big difference from the Wales game. And Six Nations matches I highlighted earlier, they're hard to win away from home. And things can, every match takes on its own life force. But I don't believe this Irish team has a hint of arrogance or overconfidence about it. I think one of the key to its success is
more what it might bring out of England.
Yes. I think one of the keys to this Irish team's success is that it's so much about themselves. I've often asked Andy Farrell this question, like, say, for example, they're at home to Italy. It is probably the most lopsided contest that Six Nations can throw up, Ireland at home to Italy. And I said, how do you, like, the players must be subconsciously aware that they've won the last dozen meetings in a row, or 20 out of 21 in Six Nations, whatever it is. And how do you cope with that? And he said, it's about ourselves. And they just focus on themselves, what they have to do right. And they're very slick, very professional, very well coached, great leadership group. And that is why you have to have confidence that they will go to Twickenham and win, because they will turn up and produce a really good performance in so many aspects of their game. And I think that is a difference with them now compared to maybe in that English team. They've been through this. They won a Grand Slam last year. They know how to win a Grand Slam. It's they're the most settled team by distance of the six. You know, each of them have had upheavals of sort, be it new coaching tickets or new backroom assistants or whatever else, or bigger turnover in players and personnel. This Irish team, the tweaks it has made have nearly all improved the team. Even Jack Crowley coming in hasn't discernibly weakened the side, it seems, when you judge their performance in Marseille particularly.
Yeah.
And it's no harm that they didn't perhaps play that brilliantly against Wales last time out.
Yeah.
It gives them plenty to work on. And I think they might even well go to Twickenham, and out of the sheer respect for England and Twickenham and knowing what that provides, will actually produce possibly a performance to rival the one in Marseille.
Mm. What's the injury situation at the moment? Because the last we heard, Keenan was recovering from his knee injury, but not up to full speed. And Ringrose kind of similar with his shoulder injury.
My information, Simon, is that Gary Ringrose is much closer to being in the mix in Twickenham than Hugo Keenan is. That he did train fully last Thursday and Friday and is going to train fully this week. And he has so much credit in the bank that while it would, he may not dislodge or break up the Bundiaki-Robbie Henshaw midfield partnership, while it will be cruel in Stuart McCluskey in many ways, I think it's likely that Ringrose will come into the match day 23. And that would apply even perhaps if Hugo Keenan was there as well, which would mean Kieran Frawley would miss out despite his greater versatility. I just think Ringrose is going to come into the 23. This management group seems to delight in players having to adapt to new roles, like McCluskey being a right winger, for example. Whatever is required, particularly with this 6-2 split, they seem quite keen on retaining. And it's a new evolution in the way this team goes at match day. And I think it's primarily designed to incorporate Ryan Bird, basically.
Yeah. So we kind of assumed Frawley's versatility allowed the 6-2. But you're kind of thinking the 6-2 is what they want, and they'll make it work no matter who the...
Exactly.
Sub, the back sub is.
Yes, and I think part of the rationale is when they decided to make Peter Omani captain, there was a real danger, for want of a better word, but a real risk of one of the best players in Irish rugby not seeing much game time in the Six Nations, namely Ryan Baird. Like, the two players who produced the biggest form improvement since the World Cup were probably, although much of the focus has been on young Big Joe McCarthy, as Andy Farrell calls him, right up there has been Ryan Baird. I think he had two small cameos in the World Cup against Tonga and South Africa. So he probably came back from that World Cup as disappointed as any player with his contribution. And I think the penny has dropped. Something's clicked with him, and he's now... He's a very unique individual, but he's also got a unique skill set and talent, and he's a wonderful athlete. And I think they have to give him game. He's already had more game time this Six Nations than he's had in the World Cup. Be it start good lengthy stints off the bench against Wales and England, or the starting against Italy in Omani's absence. And I think the 6-2 split is primarily designed to accommodate him, as well as James Ryan and Jack Cohn, and it's playing to the squad's strengths.
There's no way he starts, no?
Oh, there is a chance, yeah.
Omani dropped.
Yeah. There's every chance. That wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't be shocked. I don't think it'll come to that. I think he will want his experienced heads like O'Mahony leading the team to go to Twickenham. But I still think Ryan Baird is ultimately going to play the last 25, 30 minutes. Is probably going to go to South Africa and start the two tests over there, and will probably be a British and Irish line in a year's time.
He's a great player to watch. Farrell had a line after one of his breaks against Wales where he said something along the lines of, I don't think Ryan knew where he was going himself with the run.
What goes through your head when Ryan Baird makes a break, knowing that he doesn't know what he's going to do next either?
Yeah. But that must be a bit exciting as well. You know, like, coaches probably want to be pushed out of their own comfort zones a little bit and have players like that who will surprise them to an extent.
Yeah, and it's a game-breaking quality he has, and he's shown that sporadically throughout his career. He's still only 24, of course. There's lots of good rugby left in him. I think maybe I'm reading too much into this own as well, but I think that quote perhaps showed us why that maybe there's still a little element of both Andy Farrell and Paul O'Connell didn't quite fully 100% trust Ryan Baird, but they do so much more now. I mean, judging by his interviews, he's very much marches to his own beat. He's happy in his own skin, happy in his own company, loves his golden retriever, loves fishing, loves golf. Definitely marches to a slightly different beat, but that the mind is now fully focused on his rugby, and he's particularly pouring his energies into opposition lineouts, being a defensive lineout threat, which of course he's got the athleticism to do. So I think what the other good thing about Ryan Baird as well is he stopped being a hybrid lock come back rower. He now is becoming more and more of a specialist six, and he's getting a run of games for both province and country that he's never had before. And need to say, we're now seeing the best of him.
Yeah, you've interviewed him, we've interviewed him here on, and he is a little bit different for sure.
Yeah,
he's not afraid to speak his mind, speaks the truth. But I get the feeling, and you're definitely touching on something real there with Farrell, that he's almost like a player's best suited to be given a very specific goal, a very specific target for a game. Improve on, say, whether it's defensive line out, you're tackling, breaking the line in defense, and then just total focus. Because you can see it even when he makes a break. If there's any sort of decision, it's almost like a goal scorer who has too much time to think.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them just aren't suited to it. Some get very calm, and others go, well, I've too much time here to decide what to do around the keeper. He's better when he kind of nearly has less time to think, and he's working off just, what's my role? What's my job in this specific moment? He's getting better and better. I mean, athletically, can you, like, somebody like South Africa would definitely find a place for Ryan Baird in the team, I think.
Yes.
We've clearly got this freakish athlete who really applies himself, intelligent guy. We just need to give him focus. And if you get that on a repeat basis, then you've got a world-class player.
Yeah, because he's such a wonderful skill set as well as athleticism. Mm. You think of that tip on to Calvin Nash in the build-up to the Bundiaki try that was wrongly disallowed against Wales for a supposed forward pass against Robbie Henshaw, of which there is absolutely no conclusive proof whatsoever. If that was awarded as a try, much more would have been made about Ryan Baird's brilliant tip on to Calvin Nash. Yeah.
It was very like super rugby type skill.
Yes, yeah. He has this range of skills for sure, but he's definitely got a work ethic as well. He has good instincts as a player, wonderful line-out operator, and we know how important that is to the Irish game. Great that you can have a weapon on the opposition throw. He just ticks so many boxes as a unique talent, and it's great to see this coming to fruition. And of course, I think the other thing as well, I remember interviewing him earlier this season, a group of us, and he loves being challenged by new coaches, by new demands on him, like Jack Nienaber coming into Leinster. And that line speed that he likes to bring to defence suits him as well. I think he just likes being challenged, and he's become a really deep thinker about the game.
Yeah, it's like, here's something new to learn,
yes,
Ryan.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And he just loved it.
Jerry, you said earlier that there's no weakness in the Ireland team, no obvious weakness. But if they look back, I'm sure the England coaching team will be looking back at the World Cup and spotting the line-out malfunctions then, and maybe having a look at the Wales game as well. So that is something, particularly with Borthwick as coach, that the only way really to stop Ireland is for starters to disrupt as many line-outs as possible, steal as many line-outs as possible. Is that plausible with Borthwick there, that could be a strength of England's and they could actually do a job in this?
I think that's their best chance really, isn't it? I mean, it will be fascinating to see how they approach this game. Do they carry on with kind of make it to a more evolved attacking ball-in-hand game that they've tried to implement in the first three rounds? Or do they revert to type and go back to what they did best in the World Cup, which got them to within 2 minutes of a World Cup final, based on good line-out defence, strong set pieces, in-your-face defence, and just kicking the leather off the ball? And they might well go back to that against Ireland. And if they fancy it, they might even try and put the ball out of play and go after the Irish line-out in the Irish half as well and really pin them down that way. So I think that is. And then you've got Felix Jones amongst their ticket as well. And Felix Jones and South Africa would have analysed Ireland to death. Razzie would have analysed Ireland to death. Felix Jones would have been part of that analysis. And their defence is designed to stop this Irish team. And that's going to be fascinating to see how Ireland deal with that blitz defence, that really fast up-in-your-face defence, and how maybe Jack Crowley's kicking game comes into effect, because we saw how Billy Burns dissected the Leinster defence, the Jack Nienaber defence in the RDS. And we also saw Exeter Chiefs employ something similar in the Champions Cup. And Jack Crowley's kicking game was sublime, because he just knows how to find space. He's got a great variety to his kicking game. And also, in each of the three games to date, we've seen the opposition take England on the inside and just basically leave 3-4 defenders shooting out of the picture, gone from the defensive system. They've all opened them up like that with little clever inside balls to trail runners. And I think this Irish team has the smarts to do it, but it definitely could be troubled by this English defence, no doubt about it.
I think the game and this fixture comes at a really interesting point in Borthwick's career with England, because he obviously got the job quite late on, was given the World Cup and say, look, pick your L fellas, kick the ball, and we'll get through it. And they did well, and it kind of simplified game plan, arguably suited them quite well. The rain in the semi-final definitely helped them as well, make it a tighter game.
Sure, yeah.
And then it's like, this is your Six Nations where you build. His attack England's attack's actually gotten worse, and it was pretty bad to start with. Their defence has actually improved a little bit. They're giving away less line breaks statistically, but unfortunately the line breaks they're giving away under Felix Jones' defence are causing the big trouble, like Hugh Jones that led to Van der Merwe's first try. But that will improve. I think that will improve.
For
their,
sure.
their main problem is their attack. But for Borthwick, he's at a point, right, where if they get an absolute trimming against Ireland, like 30 points to 7 or something like that, it really kind of dents the whole idea that this guy can rebuild and he's got the skills to do it. Whereas if they go super conservative and just try and, like Stuart Barnes made the point, the less minutes of rugby in this game played, the better for England. That's the only way they can win this game, which is so grim for England and so grim for the sport of rugby if that is the case, especially if that succeeds. But he has a point too. But just the idea that Borthwick just needs to get through this one with like a close loss. England played well, a bit like the last two games where admittedly they got red cards, but they battled hard and they lost and kept their heads high afterwards. I just sort of feel like that's the best option in terms of Borthwick's career, and that taking a huge chance at this stage doesn't suit the whole setup.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, and that's what I'm kind of expecting. Do you remember last year? I know it was different circumstances. It was his first Six Nations. They absolutely got obliterated, embarrassed by the French in Twickenham, conceded over 50 points. Damien Penno running amok towards the end. And they'd only a week to turn it around to come to Dublin. And what that served to do was for them to, they found an identity, going back to this very basic, restrictive game plan to counter Ireland and what Ireland are about. You'd imagine they might do something similar coming off a defeat this time round with a two-week build-up to it. The one thing that makes you wonder otherwise, of course, is that Alex Mitchell and Marcus Smith are back in the mix. And Smith appears to be, reading between the lines in England, the designated first choice out half now. So if he starts, it's very hard to see Marcus Smith employing such a restrictive game plan. Maybe he will, but I'd be more surprised that they might try and fire a few shots even from further out than they normally do.
Yeah.
You know, they play this two rucks inside your own half, middle to 10 minutes, kick the ball in the air. It's quite extraordinary.
Even when you're 9 points down with 5 minutes to go.
Wasn't that astonishing?
Yeah.
Not once, but twice. Once with 8 minutes to go and then once with 6 minutes to go, whatever it was. Form a caterpillar and box kick from just inside your net when you need two scores.
Yeah. It shows how prescriptive
absolutely
Borthwick is. Now, I put this to Chris Jones at the BBC last week. He was one of the most, one of the fairest commentators in the game in all of the UK or Ireland. And he wasn't having it that Borthwick might actually be a sketchy coach at this level, or certainly like a head coach. He's like, no, he's gave various points. He's proven himself and blah, blah, blah. He's still building or whatever. But I think there's a good chance that Borthwick just isn't the man for the job, and his obsession with numbers and counting off stats and just rugby by numbers isn't working. And I just wonder whether it might just be a game where Borthwick gets exposed at this level.
Yeah, it could be. And if something similar happens next side as to what happened last in round four a year ago against France at Twickenham, remember as well, they've just come off a defeat in Murrayfield, lose at home to Ireland, and then they go to Paris for round five. So you're looking at another bottom half finish and potentially three defeats out of five again, which I think would be the third season in a row or something like that off the top of my head, Simon.
Yeah.
So that would be quite damaging for this coaching ticket, for this team, at a time as well when the English Premiership is going through a tough time with three clubs having gone into liquidation last season, and also with many of their leading players going to France, the top 14, not least their captain and talisman, Owen Farrell. And you wonder, will others and younger players like Arundel and so forth. So it's a tricky time for English rugby. You know, it's a bit, if you were them, you'd be a little bit worried, definitely, about the consequences of moving forward and where they're going.
Just on Hugo Keenan, and this might play into what England do, if they kind of get word that Keenan's out, again, it might change their game plan, George Ford, spiral bombs or whatever it might be.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
what's your, if you were to give a read at this stage, do you think Keenan's 50-50 or?
At best.
Right.
Be my what I would
so
think.
We're looking at Frawley.
We're looking at Frawley, definitely. I think there's no doubt about that. You know, even if Gary Rinner was to come back in the equation, I don't think he's starting the right wing ahead of Calvin Nash. I think it's very much Andy Farrell's style. If he trusts in a player like Nash or Crowley or Frawley or whoever it is, then he trusts them.
Yeah.
And he'll
Nash has been great.
Yes, exactly. So my gut instinct would be that, it will be Frawley at fullback. And it'll be fascinating to see the English team when it's announced on Thursday. Will it be George Ford or Marcus Smith at out half, because that might tell us plenty. But either way, you'd imagine that it's going to rain down high balls on Kieran Frawley, or England are going to try and do that anyway. It's all part of this. Borthwick hasn't changed his spots as a statistically driven coach. It's what fueled his success at Leicester. It's what got him in the England job. So you can't imagine him going too far away from that. And yeah, and like Stuart Barnes has said, the less rugby in this game,
and the weather.
Yeah. Yeah, the
rain wouldn't be great.
No, it wouldn't be. Although you'd almost like to, in some way, to see this Irish team really challenged by an awkward afternoon and see how they'd cope with it.
I wouldn't.
Let's just win the title, Jerry.
I've heard this talk. Go on. I've heard this on Irish radio. I've heard it from people around the place, some friends of mine. Oh, you know, we might be going into the last weekend with nothing to play for. Ireland have already the championship won.
Oh, no.
I mean,
not at all.
We've won 4 slams ever.
Ever.
And I don't get this idea that we want to be challenged. Ireland romping to a slam would be marvellous. Something new and special.
Yes, special, yes. And really underline that they are the best team in the Northern Hemisphere and set it up magnificently for a 2-test tour down to South Africa. Mm. World champions against, you know, the 1 and 2 sides in the world.
Yeah. Just that's Scotland's fault for not setting that up by beating France when they should have beaten them.
Absolutely. Yeah. They should be still
saying that every week.
Left.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. Yeah. I think I say this weekly. just be so perfect. Anyway, that's not going to happen. But we'll see. Ireland to win the title this weekend, Jerry? Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. So you'd be a mad fool to back against them, wouldn't you?
Fair enough.
You really would. It'd be really interesting to see. Like I said, it takes on a life force of its own. You remember 2 years ago, it was a Charlie Ewells who got the red card after 82 seconds. Mm. Like Twickenham then became really febrile. It became a cauldron, and they've been
wronged.
Yes, yeah. A sense of injustice.
So we don't want them to normally. It's like if Ireland get a man sent off, we don't want England to get a man sent off early, and then that potentially.
Honestly, this current team are suited to just clarity of thought. What's our job? We're down to 14 men. Yep. Keep it so simple.
Yep, absolutely.
Like Stephen Jones, sorry to rabbit on here, but Stephen Jones made the point in the Sunday Times, like, England, you need to accept you're worse at everything than Ireland. If you come to that realisation, you then maybe have a game plan to beat them.
You have a chance. Exactly.
All right. Jerry, brilliant stuff. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, thank you.
Hello, Owen. I'm just back from the embassy.
The ambassador's receptions are noted in society for their host's exquisite taste that captivates his guest.
Monsieur, with this rocher, you're really spoiling us.
Well, I had some pâté, that's pretty French.
Oh,
just canapés, man, you know what I mean?
It's yours.
Complete absence of Ferrero Rocher.
Excellent.
An eye of culture. Good manners and football.
How many Ferrero Rocher did you shove down your gut?
This is why you didn't get invited. As if the French ambassador would poison my palate with a Ferrero Rocher. Ugh.
Monsieur, with this Rocher, you're really spoiling us.
I was eyeball to eyeball with the French government's representative here in Ireland.
On the show tomorrow, for World Service members only, I'm looking at Monday-only Monaghan listeners here as a target market for this little blurb. Rory Began is going to be on the show, straight from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, where he displayed his talents yesterday in the hope of gaining a spot as a kicker with an NFL team. Began kicked a few beauties, including one from 55 yards, kicked 11 field goals out of 16. I'm going to blame the snapper for at least one of the misses, by the way. Jeez.
They're looking for a job as well, apparently.
Yeah. Well, the snapper who snapped for one of the kicks that I saw Began miss, don't know what he's put. In fact, if anything, I'm hoping the recruiters chalked it down as a positive for Began, that he was able to kick that one with an arse's roar the goal the way it was thrown back. So we're going to talk to him about his experiences. Mark Jackson from Wicklow is out there as well. Everyone in Wicklow GA wishing him all the success in the world, I'm sure.
Well, yes, you know, in the broader scope of things, but I did note with interest that they conceded 5 goals yesterday at Offaly. Monaghan also
with their goalkeeper
3 goals
off trying to make it in the NFL.
I mean, 8 goals in total.
Yeah, Monaghan have conceded quite a few
by the goalkeeping replacements for the young men chasing a dream.
Jim McGuinness, he had some interesting post-match comments.
He did. He was talking about tactical fouling in the GAA. And there's like one particular foul that continues to happen in it. And I mean, there were a couple of absolute classics in the Galway Monaghan game as well. Galway errors at least as guilty and possibly more guilty than any other team when it comes to extended period of possession. Ball is turned over and within 2 seconds, basically, is like the aim, you know. And it has actually crept into the extent where it's the Rodri foul, basically. you know, you give the ball away, immediately grab the nearest man, just pull him down, that's it. And see, the thing is, if you pull him down or you block in like a really obvious way, then it's a black card. So now teams have gotten really good at like standing a guy up, fouling him egregiously, but not pulling him, dragging him to the ground. So this, the whole idea of the black card was to remove cynical fouling. But like, the rule was never, if it's a cynical foul, give him a black card. There's like these like very specific fouls that can lead to a black card. Whereas like, where it should just be, if it's a cynical foul, then you give him the back. Because like, there's so much cynical fouling. Like, McGuinness is absolutely right. I mean, it's, and like, transition is the only really exciting part of Gaelic football at the moment. When a team gives it away, two quick foot passes, and you're in on
I
goal.
Guess every foul, by definition, if it's deliberate, is cynical then.
Yeah. Basically, I mean,
there'd be like, a lot of black cards would be the only thing.
Well, there would be a lot less tactical fouling.
People, cop on and change behaviour. Yeah.
But no, like, you know, there are genuine attempts at trying to stop a man and genuine attempts at trying to play the ball when it's in another player's possession. And then there's just, we've given the ball away, two quick kick pass. Our keeper's 60 yards out from his goal. Mm. Just make sure this foul happens. So I think McGuinness is probably right to he's probably right to bring it up.
But do Donegal ever maybe indulge in any of these?
I wouldn't think tactics? So really. It wouldn't really be their style. No. But it is hilarious that we you know, we kind of as of like the last kind of 10 days, it's like, don't worry about it. Jim Gavin will sort it out. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Any problems, don't worry about it. Jim Gavin's got it. It's fine. I don't even know why I brought it up on. It's all in hand. Jim Gavin, it's...
Jim Gavin's reputation is going to be absolutely ruined when Gaelic football looks the exact same in 2 years as it does now. His entire legacy is going to be destroyed.
Tried,
yeah, well, that's true. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Si. Thanks for listening. We'll see you during the week. If you fancy signing up, all episodes will be ad-free in that case. And the Second Gavin's podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Murph would have helped out there, but he's drinking a coffee.
That's the second time he's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.